Hello, in this audio snippet, we will be talking about a very specific topic, so we will not even make an attempt to continue talking about the post-Civil War period in America. So the 1876 election that we have been trying to get to will have to stay on hold, and hopefully when we get to it, some of the things that are going to be mentioned here will tie in and reinforce what needs to be said about that sad election. So before getting to that election, we will want to talk about something that's been on my mind that it's as if there's been a need to talk about this. And I finally understood the fuller context of why we needed to talk about this. And it has to do with a very simple thing that might seem completely unrelated to lots of things or many of the things we have talked about in these audio snippets. But it's related to an advert a commercial that I've seen on television constantly for months and months and months. But before talking about that, I would like to just briefly say that definitely the country is on its way to dying, and I have seen in this week in various ways the very overt antagonism that there is towards the truth, and it's so palpable. I feel the hatred. I really feel the hatred. You almost directed at me as a person, but I know that it's not me. It's like they don't know who I am. They don't know what I'm about. But it's as if people perceive something and inadvertently, in one way or another, kind of react. It's as if they feel what people like me represent, and they react to it instinctively, and it's with hatred, including things that happened today or the day before the time of this recording. Things that happened to me that would be too long to explain. With strangers shouting obscenities at me for no reason at all, people staring at me for no reason at all, with me just sitting outside, it just people clearly, you know, looking back and staring, and as if I was committing some sort of crime when I'm just sitting there, the negative attention. People doing things to my personal belongings. It'd be too long to explain, and it's been a mixture of now. Usually, I used to get some of that behavior from mostly Hispanic people, and even without me doing anything, just you can feel the. It'd be too long to explain, but the thing is that now I feel it from. And I've been receiving it from white people and black people and Hispanics. It's become generalized, and that goes to what I've said before about the cancer of this country having metastasized. When it reaches even to the core of white people, that's when you know that the country's gone. There is no hope for it, no hope of restoration. And as shared in an earlier audio clip, I briefly mentioned, you know, even that I was physically assaulted at one point in a way that I would have never expected ever to have happened in America. It was a manifestation of, or a confirmation that yes, the country is on its way to becoming like a third world country. To have the sort of things happen that you would normally expect in a pathetic third world country, And thankfully, you know, I was protected, you could say, in that attack. So even though I was attacked, I was not directly hit. If you could, I don't want to go into the details of what happened, but so I was protected, but still the fact that it happened, and that someone attempted to attack me in that way, is a manifestation that the country has lost its core. It is no longer the America that. It had a chance for greatness from its birth, despite its faulty foundation. It had it always had this chance of greatness. There was this kind of covering over this country, over this land. There was a manifest destiny that had more, that was more than just being able to go from coast to coast. Because, you know, obviously, as you may know, that term has always been associated with this sense that the country was going to expand from the East Coast, you know, the Atlantic Ocean, all the way someday to the Pacific Ocean, and it did come to pass. But our manifest destiny was much greater than just being, you know, a country that goes from coast to coast, from ocean to ocean. It was much more than that, and America never really understood the fullness of its potential greatness, and that's why so many Americans that became convinced, especially on the conservative side, that we had already achieved greatness. And that's why, you know, the stupid Trump slogan, Make America Great Again, is making the assumption, yeah, we were great already, we just want to get back to our greatness that the evil liberals have taken away, when in fact we had never achieved the true greatness. We were great, a great country in terms of our potential. You know, it's like having a kid who has a lot of talent playing a sport, and you see the greatness in him. So the greatness is there. It's just not yet fully manifested, but you see the greatness. But they're still not great. They haven't achieved what they're supposed to achieve. They haven't broken any records. They haven't achieved any feats that will go down in the history of the sport yet. They are doing some great things, but they're still not reached the greatness, but they are great in potential, and that's what this country always was. But that potential is being taken away, and it's basically gone. It's just that it's just not official yet. We have less than 5 months left before it's officially taken away. So this country is dead. It's become, for all intents and purposes, a place that has lost its worth, its value. It has become trash, and it will, with the passing of the years after its official death, a few months from now, it will that trashiness will be manifested in deeper and deeper ways. And just to give you an idea, I was not going to talk about this, but I saw an article on the, I believe it was the New York Post. It may have been the New York Post or some article out there that I found a link to, and it talked about the stench of New York City. You know, someone complaining about how it stinks of cannabis. And we have shared in these audio snippets about that extensively, I believe, because it is an ever-present thing. It is so annoying and so frustrating. But so this person was complaining about the stench of cannabis. But the sad thing is that the person who was writing this started by talking about the importance of decriminalizing or stigmatizing cannabis use. That he welcomed this, you know, liberation that had happened, where now it was no longer a crime to smoke cannabis. because that was, as he kind of put it, it was putting brown and black bodies in prison unfairly, in a disproportionate way. But then he goes on to complain about, you know, the stench of cannabis throughout the city. And then he goes on to compare it to smoking, that in years past, you know, everybody smoked and you could smell the smoke, cigarette smoke everywhere. But now it doesn't happen because the public has been indoctrinated into hating cigarette smoke. And now it's looked, you know, if someone's smoking, they get, you know, people's glares and they get the evil eye from everybody. So people are very reluctant to smoke cigarettes. And he was talking about hopefully getting to that point with cannabis smoke. And it seems just such a contradiction of nonsense. And that tells, and to me, that's kind of a snapshot of America. You know, people who are not thinking straight, just talking stupidity, and sometimes getting close to the truth, but because they're still attached to lots of falsehoods, it's like the falsehood has like a leash on them, and they, you know, they go out off of the you know, the stick, the falsehood stick that's tying them to the ground, and they start walking towards the truth, and suddenly the leash they reach the limit of the leash, and then they get pulled back towards falsehood, and they could very easily take some scissors and cut the leash off and walk towards the truth, but they can't do it. And so this person who was talking about, you know, how great it is that cannabis is no longer illegal, then complains loudly about the smell of cannabis in the city. Well, what do you want? I mean, if you're legalizing it, obviously it's going to happen. And then he says, well, it has to be regulated by public attitudes. Well, and then he compares it to cigarette smoke. And obviously, he's anti-cigarette smoke. From the words he said in that article, he was basically kind of insinuating that he hated cigarette smoke as if it was some sort of evil thing. Well, if he wants to apply the same concept to cannabis smoke, wouldn't that mean that people will also hate cannabis smoking? Then why? What is wrong with decriminalizing it or criminalizing it if it's such a bad thing? So all these contradictions, it just doesn't make any sense. And this stupid argument, and that's when I saw, oh yeah, this is one of the core reasons. It's not the single one, only one, but it's one of the core reasons why liberals want to cannabis to be decriminalized. It's because they have this stupid notion that somehow criminalizing cannabis is racist, because most of the people who get punished because of those laws are not white, they're black or Hispanic or whatever. And that's why they feel the need to decriminalize it, and therefore it's showing that the only reason that they're doing it is because they feel that it's some sort of white imposition, and an excuse to put black people and brown people in jail. A stupid idea. The fact is, if black people and brown people are being put in jail because of cannabis laws, it was because they were the ones smoking it the most, and we all know it. You know, people in black neighborhoods, they have to live. They had to live with that. You know, even when it was illegal, and now that it's legal, can you imagine what it must be like to live in these black neighborhoods where now they can just smoke openly and not worry at all? And you have these black young kids growing up in that environment, and how can you have any hope of any future if you're living in an environment that's stinking of cannabis, where people are just wasting their lives away, cannabis has a destructive effect on the brain, on your soul, on your attitude about life. It just drains you. And I saw another article, and the one that I'm talking about, I think, was not in the New York Post. But the other one, it was another article about how, and that was, I believe, in the New York Post, a person complaining about the horrors of cannabis smoke in the city, cannabis being legalized in New York City, because he or she, I'm not sure, I don't remember, was describing how he or she would go into a coffee place or to order some food or whatever, and he would give a $20 bill. He talked about this case where he gave the guy a $20 bill. The guy received the bill and then walked away and didn't register the transaction on the cash register, and just walked away with the $20 bill, waving it to his coworkers. And he had to wait and finally, get someone to, give him his food. And he described incidents like that, where he would repeat, he would be in a restaurant in New York City, order something, and the waiter would just stare at him blankly. And the whole thing was about how now that in New York they have these high minimum wages that are way above the market value, you could say, of the jobs. So these people are getting paid a lot of money. Relatively more money. And now that cannabis is legalized, a lot of these low-level, and I hate to say it like that, and I don't mean to demean those jobs. I'm not saying it in that context, so please don't take it that way. So these low-level jobs, and I mean that from an... I don't know how to describe, but I think you know what I mean. These low-level jobs who are getting paid above their market value are being filled with people who have few skills and who are most of them minority people, and they are just smoking it up. And he was explaining in the article how these people had this kind of glazed look in their eyes. They looked like they were zombies. And he kind of, I think he used that term, I think it was a he, used that term zombie, like this. And clearly these people were high on cannabis. So maybe on their, break, coffee break or whatever, they would go outside and smoke a joint and come back in and continue, quote, working. And I was reading that, like, my goodness, it's not just me. It's not just me being obsessed about people smoking cannabis. The consequences are there. Everybody's seeing it, but no one. But we are. But it's just a manifestation of the decay of this country. It is falling apart, and the people who are speaking out against what's going on are not welcome in this land anymore. You have the liberals who just hate the truth for the sake of hating the truth because it's against their religion. And then you have conservatives who will only accept half of the truth and resent it when you tell them that their religion of conservatism does not include the full truth. So it's like hated by both sides. And that's where we are right now. So now that we've shared that small introduction, let's talk about the topic that we wanted to talk about. It had to do with this commercial on television. For months and months, and especially you who are listening may not be experiencing this if you're living in America. Maybe because of the market where you live, the TV market, or probably because you have cable, or you watch streaming you stream shows on the internet. I can't do any of that. I don't have cable, so I just have to stick to broadcast television of the channels available in the New York area. And thankfully, there's a significant number of on-air channels that are available. But the thing is that in the channels that I watch, I see it. Maybe I might not be exaggerating if I say that I see 10 or 20 of those adverts a day. And the adverts are lawyers who talk about the Camp Lejeune Act. For those of you who might not know, Camp Lejeune is a military fort or whatever I believe it's in North Carolina. I think it's in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, or something to that effect. The thing is that it's a Marine station or fort or whatever they're called. And apparently, there was some sort of water contamination, apparently, allegedly, in Camp Lejeune, and some toxic things were getting into the water. And Congress, the U.S. so-called Congress, and I say that with inverted commas, air quotes, Congress recently passed this act, the Camp Lejeune Act, I think it's called officially, and it is an act that sets apart billions of dollars of compensation for the people who suffer illnesses, cancers, and things like that as a result of this alleged water contamination at Camp Lejeune. And the fact that it was passed, with Bite Me, shuffling his perverted feet in the White House, and with the Congress being controlled at that time, I think when it was passed by Democrats, that in and of itself just made me think, oh, there's something that ain't quite right with this act. I just felt it. And the weird thing is that this act talks about the water contamination happening between 1953 and 1985. And I think I know this because the adverts say it over and over again. So definitely it was 1953, and I believe the last year was 1985. So the thing, the act talks about the contamination during that period, and that if you live in Camp Lejeune, the advert goes between 1953 or 1987, 85, and you had a re or you had a relative living in Camp Lejeune, you can get some compensation. So the idea of the advert is to have people call those lawyers so that they can join this, file some sort of claim to get a cut of the billions of dollars. And first of all, when you think about it, 1953 to 1985, that's what, 70 years ago to what, 40 years ago, more or less. So you're talking about something that happened at least 38 years ago, and going back to 70 years ago. And it's now that they're finally compensating people for something that is how difficult it's going to be to trace it back. I mean, how can you trace someone's cancer to something that happened 40, 70 years ago? There's something very iffy about all of it. Even if you assume for a second that it's all legitimate, what is bothersome about this is there are many aspects of it. One of it is, first of all, the lawyers who, like sharks smelling blood, are gathering around this act and trying to make lots of money. And that's one of the problems with the legal system in America. One of the things we have said in in previous audio snippets is that in the New American Constitution, one of the things that would have changed is the legal system, the legal profession would become part of the public employee system. And in many ways, they already are because, as we've shared, lawyers, even private practice lawyers, when they are in court, they are seen as officers of the court, and they are treated with the same standard. They have to behave according to the standard of an officer of the court. So in a sense, they are as if they were public employees. But the problem we've had in America is that the lawyers are a money-making business. So they trade in the business of laws. So they manipulate laws to make money. So they take the legal system and try to maximize profit from operating and manipulating the legal system. And that incentive should be taken away from the legal profession because it contaminates it. Lawyers should not be, they should have a fixed salary. And they should have a cap just like any other public employee of 1.5 times the national average of income. Just as we've shared before, that would have been in the New American Constitution, this limit that no one, even the president, so-called president of the United States, could make more than 1.5 times the national average. Lawyers would be under that. They would not be allowed to make money off of lawsuits. They would have a fixed rate. So because a lot of the incentives in of these lawyers when they get into these type of class act lawsuits is that they try to get like $1 million for their client, but their motivation is that they will get 30-40% of the cut. So a lot of this money that was set aside by this so-called Camp Lejeune Act, a significant percentage, I'd say 20-30% or maybe even more percent of that money, of those billions of dollars, is going to go into the pockets of lawyers across the country. And that's what I believe, frankly, to be the underlying motivation for this Camp Lejeune Act. The majority of lawyers, I would dare say, are Democrats. The vast majority of them, they are liberal Democrats by far. That's not the case, you know, across the board. Obviously, there's always going to be non-liberals and so forth. But I would dare say, from what I have seen and observed, that the vast majority of them are Democrat liberals, and they must have lobbied in Congress and with the Democrats controlling Congress at the time, to have this act passed, because it was just, it's like hitting the lottery, winning the lottery, hitting the jackpot. And the thing also is that the Democrat Congress people are, you know, happy to do this, first of all, because it's not their money. They're just, let's set aside X billions of dollars. It's not coming out of their pockets, so they couldn't care less. And they know that a lot of this money is going to, a significant amount of it is going to go into the pockets of liberal lawyers who are then going to make campaign donations to the Democratic Party. So at the end of the day, the Democrat Party wins and gets a significant portion of those billions of dollars back into their party coffers. So and it's this idea that, you know, of Democrats, they always use the government as a way to aggrandize themselves. They violate the third pillar of the New American Constitution that we always talk about, the pillar that talks about authority never being used for banal purposes and self-aggrandizing purposes for self-benefit. And they violate that third pillar. That's why they're not legitimate authorities in a metaphysical sense. They are not legitimate authorities. That's what liberals do. They preach about the collective in order to benefit from it. They act like they are champions of the little people and fighting for the lower classes and so forth. And they have this wonderful collective message of them sacrificing and fighting for the masses. But what they're really doing is they are using the concept of the collective to benefit personally, individually from it, and it becomes this like they are parasites that latch on to the collective, this collective entity that they create and build, and then benefit from it. But the main reason why I felt the need to share about this advert had to do with what they say in it. They say, like, for example, one of the adverts goes, we have had many questions about this this thing. One of them is, will the Marines be affected by this lawsuit? And then they go, no. It's not the Marines will not be affected. It's the government that will have to pay the money, but the Marines are not being penalized. And when I hear that, and when I hear other versions of this advert from different lawyers, I go, well, wait a second. Okay, so the allegation is that in Camp Lejeune between 1953 and 1985, somehow there was some poison getting into the water system, and obviously, you know, sometimes bad things happen. It's no one's fault. So was it an accident or was it not an accident? If it was an accident, well, how can you blame anyone? You know, it happens. Bad things happen. But clearly, if you're paying people, then you're assuming responsibility. Like, and I don't know the details of the act, but clearly there's an implication that there was negligence. Otherwise, there would be no reason for paying anybody. So there was negligence in Camp Lejeune. The people running Camp Lejeune were negligent about the water system. Maybe they knew that there was something wrong with the water system, and they didn't do anything about it, and therefore the people who suffer from this toxic water are due compensation. But then, okay, so if this happened, if for, 32 years, supposedly, there was this toxic water in the system, and the people running Camp Lejeune, who was running Camp Lejeune? The Marines. It's a Marine station, or whatever it's called. So, obviously, the people running for this Camp Lejeune thing were Marines. Marine generals, Marine colonels, Marine whatever the hell they were. So these Marines, and by the way, I have a very low image of Marines. And if you're a Marine, please don't take this personally, but I'm talking collectively. There's something very wrong with the Marines. I've always resented, I don't know why, even from 20, 30 years ago, every time somebody would say Marines, I would cringe on the inside. There was something wrong with them. And maybe we'll talk about that later. But the thing is that these Marine generals or colonels or whatever were allowing this toxic water to continue in the system, and they couldn't care less about the people living in Fort Bragg. And that also makes me think, well, did they have like a separate water system, these generals or whatever? Because if they didn't care about the others being contaminated, well, at least they must have cared about their own contamination. So, well, who knows? Maybe they just drank a bottle of water, who knows, whatever. The thing is, somebody was being negligent. Now, this goes to the heart of what's wrong with our legal system. If these people were being negligent and allowing this poison to get into the bodies of all these people for 30 years, isn't that homicide? I mean, I know it's not literal direct homicide, but it's almost, it's killing you one drop at a, one one stab at a time. So it's a violation of the right to life. It's a form of murder. Well, if it's a form of murder, these people are responsible for killing or the early deaths of a whole bunch of people. Now, the thing is, these generals and all these brigadiers or whatever they are, all these people will not are not paying a single cent out of their pockets. And that's what bothers me when they in this adverse, when they say, people have asked us, are the Marines going to be affected? Because obviously, the reason why this question is being asked, by the way, is because Marines, and that's one of the things that bothers me, have a very strong sense of collective loyalty. You know, they have this Semper Fi slogan, always faithful, and they always, when they see each other, Semper Fi, Semper Fi. They have this strong sense of collective membership, belonging, like they are like in a gang, and they're loyal to each other, and loyal in a very bad way. In other words, they derive their sense of value from the collective, from being a Marine, and that has to do with the mammoth thing that we were talking about in a previous audio clip. They derive their identity, their self-worth, their mammon is something external that they derive their value from. So that's why you can't criticize the Marines to a Marine, because that's like criticizing their mama. And you don't talk bad about your, somebody's mama. It's that sort of attitude. And that blocks them off from ever accepting any judgment about the collective. It's the same thing that happens with many ethnic groups. If you criticize, there's something wrong with the black culture, then the people in black America whose mammon is tied to their race will go, oh, how dare you, you're a racist and blah, blah, blah. And they never fix anything in black America. And then young black kids, their lives are getting destroyed, their futures are getting torn away. But it's more important to preserve the honor of the black family, of the black culture, of the black race, than to save the individuals who are dying inside that collective. So the thing is that that's why the people who are thinking about this, about getting this money, former Marines or families of Marines, one of their concerns is, I don't want to hurt the Marines. Well, who was negligent about the contaminated water? It wasn't some government official. It was some Marine. Fellow Marines were, assuming this all is true, were killing people by letting the poison stay in the water system for 30 years. So, but these are the people who should be held to account, the individuals, but they are shielded. As if they were this kind of like a faceless entity that was operating, like they were not themselves when they were ordering the water to remain contaminated or not doing what needed to be done to fix the water system. It's as if they were no longer, let's say their names were, one of the guys was John Smith, General John Smith. He was no longer John Smith. He was a General John Smith that is different from John Smith the person. But it doesn't matter. If I am, for example, a police officer, and I take a club, my billy club or whatever it's called, and I start beating the hell out of somebody for no reason at all, just because I didn't like what they were doing, or they were not committing any crimes, but it was something I didn't personally like, and I come up to them and start beating their heads, and I kill the person. It doesn't matter that I did it whilst I was a police officer. I, the individual, committed a crime. I violated the right to life of another person, and I should be accountable. I shouldn't be shielded by my police badge or my... And obviously, liberals are the first to agree. You know, police brutality, blah, 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 put them in jail and hang them, and they get all upset about that. But for some reason, that never gets projected to other aspects. So that's why Congress people who are destroying the economy constantly with all their actions, adding to the national debt constantly, are never personally accountable. That's one of the things we've mentioned in the New American Constitution. There would have been a clause saying if you pass a budget deficit and the government has to borrow money to cover that deficit, the interest that is going to be paid on that loan on that year, a part of it is going to come out of your pockets. There's going to be a proportional penalty on their income for the rest of their lives, as long as that loan is outstanding, as long as that loan has not been paid out. They will have to pay, even when they leave Congress, continue paying a penalty from their pockets, taken out of their tax, deduction, or even taken out of their pocket in their tax return for the rest of their lives for having used up, incurred a debt on using public finances. So in other words, they are not shielded. They violated the right to property of their fellow Americans, and they can't be shielded by the fact that they are Congress people. No, they are, as human beings, did something that affected the right to property of other human beings, and therefore they are criminally responsible, personally. And in this case, they might not go to jail, but they took away people's money by incurring this debt that incurs interest. And therefore, they are going to incur a penalty from their own private pocket to pay as a form of punishment for their malfeasance whilst in Congress. So they're not shielded by just, this mantle of being the congressman, like this faceless entity that voted for this deficit that is affecting people's lives, and these deficits are destroying the Social Security funds. They're destroying the long term future of Americans, because in a few short years the Social Security fund is going to run out. It's already run out, but what I mean is there's not going to be any money available to make up for what has run out, and Social Security is going to collapse. And you're going to see, that's when you're going to see like the open manifestations of how this country has turned really into a third world country. It's going to be a third world country less than 5 months from now. But the full manifestation of it is going to take a little time for people to realize, oh, we really are a third world country. But the thing is, what I'm trying to say is that all this national spending is causing long-term suffering for other people. People, older people, will not be able to live or subsist anymore because they won't be getting any money to live off of, despite the fact that they put all this money into the Social Security fund throughout their lives, paying thousands and thousands and millions of dollars and billions of dollars in taxes to fund this, and they're expecting to have that money, given back to them in some way when they're old, and they're not going to have it, and these people are going to suffer a lack. They're going to be homeless. They're going to be have no food. So their right to life and property is going to be violated as the result of the misdeeds of individual Congress people who voted for all this economic collapse, for actions that misappropriated the people's money and has led to this collapse. But they're not going to be held accountable under the current system. But they are accountable. They are individuals who violated the rights of other individuals. And that's the problem we have in our legal system. We have this collective shielding of people when they become entities. And that's one of the things that we've said about about companies, that we have had this problem that we keep forgetting that companies are just a group of people, of individuals coming together to do something. The company, this concept of company, the way, especially liberals, corporation, you know, that evil term, corporation. When you say corporation, you can see their eyes light up and fire coming out of their eyes with hatred. It's like a knee-jerk reaction because liberals are religious fanatics. You know, they are, you know, when you're talking to a religious fanatic, you say a certain term because they've been trained to react like Pavlov and the dog and all that. You know, you blow the whistle a certain way and they have been trained to react, just have this knee-jerk reaction. So when you say corporation to a liberal, it's like, oh, hatred, oh, evil, the evil corporation, ooh. Or you say oil company, ooh, the evil oil company, ooh, destroying the earth. So this, they don't think, they're religious fanatics. This, we have raised this concept of a corporation, this evil entity that is doing all these things. And when the corporation does something wrong, the corporation has to pay and compensate with billions of dollars in punishment. But the thing is, no individual within the corporation is criminally punished. If they really did something, if a company, for example, came and produced a product that starts killing people, for example, Pfizer, starts killing people left and right, and if people ever admitted that Pfizer is killing people with their product, then a lawsuit happens, and Pfizer has to shell out these billions of dollars. But out of what funds? The funds in the company. But the problem is, this company doesn't exist outside of the individuals. You take away all the individuals, there is no company. So who is responsible for this deadly product being in the market, killing people? It's the CEO, the CFO, the IOU, the COU, whatever the hell, you know, acronyms you may want to put. These are the people who are authorizing and producing, deliberately producing a poison to make money. And they are benefiting from it because the more profits, then they get comp bonuses and all this stuff. And that's another topic that we have briefly touched on, the concept that publicly owned companies should they should have caps on the salaries of their CEOs, of their management. And if they don't want to have the caps, they can't be public. Simple as that. Either you're public and have these caps, a CEO cannot make more than 2 times or 3 times the national average. Simple as that. It's ridiculous to have these CEOs making billions of dollars in bonuses. It makes no sense. No metaphysical, no economic, no functional sense at all. There's no correlation. But the thing is, they know that they can get these, claim these bonuses and all this because of the system that is in place if the company makes money. So these people are benefiting personally from destroying other people's lives, but they are never personally punished. The thing is, if I am the CEO and I know that I'm releasing a product that is killing people, or I'm being negligent about it, I don't care if it's killing people. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I couldn't care less. I don't give a damn. I'm just going to sell this product and market it because it's going to make money for the company and make me get a bigger bonus. Then I am killing people. I am violating the right to life of individuals. Then I should be the one who should be rotting in jail and being punished for having killed so many people with this product. You see what I'm saying? But no, we create this concept of this evil entity, this collective that swallows up the individuals, and then the individuals who are really responsible are not being punished. To me, it's more important that the CEO rot in jail and be punished for the rest of his life for having poisoned millions of people than to have the company shell out $1 billion in compensation. No, it's like, you know, if somebody kills your father, you're not gonna go, okay, give me money. You killed my father. Give me $1 million. No, no. Is that how you would react if your father got murdered by someone? Oh, give me money. No, your reaction is, you son of a bitch, you killed my father. You deserve, and you're not repentant about it. You don't deserve any forgiveness. You have no repentance in your heart over what you did to my father. You must be punished until you repent. I will not forgive you until you repent. And you are not going to repent unless you're properly punished and judged, and put in jail and pay for what you did. The thing is that we have created this cloud of collectivism that protects that where the individual no longer becomes accountable. And that's why, going back to the Camp Lejeune adverts, it's like, I go, okay, if Congress saw that something was wrong, then the solution is not to give money out, especially because it's not their money, and it's giving this arbitrary amount of money to people who, you know, how can you prove? And I'm pretty sure that the criteria for proving that your cancer or your family member, you know, died of some disease caused by the water system, I'm sure the criteria is very low or very, very flimsy, so that lots of people will be able to get that money. Because how can you prove that something that happened 70 to 40 years ago, you know, affected you or a family member and then ended up killing them? How do you prove that? You know, if you lived in Camp Lejeune in 1953, that's 70 years, or maybe I'm doing the wrong, yeah, 70 years ago, and you lived there for a year, you know, the whole year of 1953, and now you have cancer, and you're 92 years old, and you have some sort of malignant cancer. How do you prove that it was the water you drank that year, 1953? It is ridiculous. But Congress says, okay, and they do it because all they care about is using this as a slush fund, you know, to get money, pump money into the lawyers, and the lawyers will pump it back into the Democrat Party. And it's not their money that's being sacrificed here, so it doesn't affect them. But if this so-called Congress really thought there was something wrong about what happened in Camp Lejeune, why aren't the Marines who ordered I know this sounds contradictory, but who ordered the negligence? But sometimes negligence is not doing anything, but not doing anything is something you order yourself to do. So even though you didn't release an order, you didn't order something, and you had to order yourself not to order it. I hope I'm making sense. In other words, inaction is still some sort of action. It's an action of doing nothing, of deliberately choosing to do nothing. That's the action you committed. You chose not to do anything. So these people ordered, who made the orders to be negligent, or I don't think they were putting poison deliberately into the water system. I don't even know how it got there. I couldn't care less. The thing is that Congress is claiming that there were people in power within the Marine Corps who who ordered this negligence in one way or another. And why then aren't these people being held to account, even the ones who are living? Because obviously this money's going out to people who are supposedly still alive and who are suffering the consequences of this tragedy or whatever. So a lot of these generals might still be alive. And why, or at least posthumously, you know, they could be indicted or sentenced for having violated these people's right to life. But it's not happening because we are in the concept of the collective. The collective kind of shields people from individual accountability. And there's something profoundly wrong with that. So now the second thing, which might seem unrelated, but is related, is this phrase that hit me the other day. I was watching a show and somebody who didn't do it in a mean way or with bad intentions, was talking about someone, and he said, I was watching on television, he said, and this man decided to give back to the community. But he said it in a positive way, like this guy was, active in something. I forget the details, but the thing is he used this phrase, give back to the community. And then for some reason, I've always had this, something inside of me always cringe when I hear that phrase. It's just, I don't know, there's something wrong about it. And the person who said this, I like him. He's a nice fellow, so I don't see him as being evil for having said this. But he is misguided, because he is swallowed the Kool-Aid on this. So, but this, I would cringe every time I'd hear that comment. But this time, for some reason, it clicked. It's as if I finally understood the fullness of why I hated, or a hidden portion of why I hated that phrase so much. And it was, it's like it hit me like someone just said it to me, the word back, and I realized, oh, back. So it's not that he was not. People are praised not for giving to the quote community, but for giving back to the community. And then it hit me like a ton of bricks. Give back. Well, when do you use the phrase give back? Like if I have a book and somebody comes to me and says, give back the book. Give the book back. What are they implying if they're telling me to give the book back? They're telling me that I took it from someone else and I have to give it back. You know, just like the Midnight Oil song, Beds Are Burning, that talked about the Europeans, the white evil Europeans coming to Australia and taking the land away from the Aborigines. It's their land, we ought to give it back. That's what they say in their song. Give it back. So it has this connotation that you took something that's not yours and you have to return it, because if you keep it, you're a thief. You're stealing something that belongs to someone else. So that, and then I said, why do people say give back to the community? And that's when it just opened up in my understanding. It's that, and this comes from communist thinking, Marxist thinking. See, in the Marxist ideology, people are just like faceless entities that appear on Earth to serve the collective. That's what it's called, communism, community. It's this idea that you are born to serve the community. You have no value in and of yourself as an individual. You have value only in the context of the community you're in. And if you give to the community, then you have value. But if you don't serve the community, then you're worthless. Because the community is the God you have to serve. It's the thing that gives you life. It's your mother. And this mother needs to be honored and served and worshipped and revered. Your life is to give to this entity. And so the value is not in the individual. The value is in the community. You are separated from the community, then you have no value. And that's one of the things that's why liberals are so insistent on ostracizing people they disagree with. Because to them, it's like, if you don't follow the religion of liberalism, then we're going to ostracize you. We're going to smear you. We're going to find some woman who is going to claim that you raped them. And allegations from 30, 40 years ago, just like what's happening to Trump right now, at the time of this recording, you know, like what happened to Clarence Thomas. You know, they always dredge up what happened to Herman Cain. You know, whenever they find someone that they find difficult to fight against, they always dredge up this woman. Comes up from 30, 40 years ago, claiming some sort of sexual molestation. So the thing is, they always bring up something to try to destroy a reputation and ostracize you. They want to censor you, shut you up, leave you isolated so that you don't have the right to speak. And that's one of the things I've been feeling recently. It's as if they're trying to do that to me. I feel it on the streets. I don't know how to explain it. It's a very intangible thing, but I perceive it. It's because sometimes on the streets I am vocal. When I say, I sometimes shout things out loud. For example, with the cannabis, when I smell the smoke, cannabis smoke, I shout things out loud. And what the liberals do, these jackals, these animals do, is that whenever they find someone who doesn't jive with them, then they try to ostracize them, destroy them, isolate them. And like they are pariahs, because to them it's their strongest way of saying you have no value, because you as an individual are worth nothing unless you are committed to the cause of the community, the cause of the collective. And the thing is that this collective slowly becomes an entity, and usually in the political environment, this entity becomes the state, the government. So then serving the community means serving the government officials, the elites running the system. So this is the problem. So the thing is, when they say give back to the community, the thing is, it's as if to say the community gives you value. You have value because of the community. That's why people say, you know, my heritage, and they talk about, you know, their ethnicity, whatever, my Latino heritage, because they are falling into this idea that your value, the mammon thing, their value is derived from the community. The community gives you value. It gives you a raison d'être. You exist because of the community. Without the community, you are nothing. You are of no value. The community gives you all these traditions. The community gives you all this heritage, all these values, and all this training and all these concepts that are put into you by the community. And if you didn't have the community, you wouldn't have all these things in you, and therefore you would be worthless and useless. So that's why you have to give back, because the community gave you life. It's like the mother, you know, saying, I gave you life. You know, like those mothers who are very controlling of their kids, I gave you life. And that's why abortion is so important to liberals, because it's the ultimate way of saying, I, as a woman, can decide whether you live or die. If I don't like you, I'm just going to go abort you. But if I like you, then I will let you live. I will give you life. I will allow you to come into the earth. And mothers who are, you know, controlling, they're always kind of like shoving that back in the kid's face. Like, you owe me. You know, I breastfed you. I did this for you. I allowed you to be born, because if I had aborted, you would have never been born. You know, they never say it like that, but that's what's going on, like, behind the scenes, in a sense. And then you are permanently tied to the mother community, and the mother community ends up, it's not just this intangible thing. Eventually, it takes a tangible form, in the form of some organization that controls your life. The same thing happens in the church, in the Christian church system. Same thing. It's the church, the mother church, that gives you life. You have a value because there's a church where you can do spiritual stuff in. You know, we allow you to, you know, you we set up the environment where you can serve the Lord, quote unquote, by singing in the choir. So, and why is there a choir? Because there's a church. If there's no church, there's no choir. If there's no choir, you can't sing in the choir, then you can't contribute
to the Lord. Or, for example, we have a soup kitchen in the church. You're serving the community. You know, that stupid term, serving the community. And I have nothing against serving people, but I believe in serving individuals, in serving other human beings, not the community. This creates this entity, this evil entity, that destroys the individual's value, and also, in other ways, destroys the evil individual's accountability for their actions, because they can hide behind the cloud of the collective. But the thing is that in the church system, we have a soup kitchen, we're going to serve the community, and you can come and serve the Lord by serving the poor, then you're fulfilling some passage somewhere in the Bible or whatever. And you go, yes, if there was no church, there'd be no soup kitchen, then I wouldn't have a way to serve the poor and give back to the community and give back to God. But give back to God, quote unquote, is in this case, give back to the church, because the church is the one making it possible for you to do, quote, spiritual stuff. And therefore, the conservative Christian cannot detach himself from the church system, because the church system is what gives him life. There's no church, then it's as if there were no God to serve, because how can you serve God without the church system? And you'd go, and these people that have such a low level of understanding, if their religion or their faith is true, then there is a God, an invisible God. Then if all that stuff that's in the Bible is true, then there are spirits, then we are spirit beings, then we can project ourselves spiritually, and we can be connected with each other in a spiritual way, and we can serve each other in a spiritual way. And I'm not just talking about, you know, having just this ethereal thing where there's no reality and everything is just spiritual. No, I'm saying that, no, you're connected to a spiritual body, supposedly, according to your Bible, conservative Christian. It's not a church. It's a collective body. They in the Bible, they talk about the body of Christ. You think that's a church? Is a church called the body of Christ? Are you that stupid? No. If that thing is, that book is real, and if the body of Christ is real, it's a spiritual entity. So you can't, you don't have to be attached to a church system to be connected to that entity if it's real. And yeah, there will be literal manifestations of it, but the literal manifestation is not the reality. The reality is, supposedly, if you really believe in your Christianity, then the reality is what you can't see. I hope I'm making sense. But the thing is that these collective entities, become the life givers. They are the ones who give life to you and who give you a raison d'être, and you're tied to them. And that's why, you know, people who tie themselves to their ethnicity, that's their community. And they can't be disloyal to the community, because the community is what gave them their identity. They believe their identity comes from their ethnicity. So if someone comes and criticizes their ethnicity, then they go, oh, you're criticizing my mother. You know, you're bad-mouthing my mother. So they can't change anything, and then the system continues in its decay, because anyone who criticizes the system is criticizing somebody's mama, in a figurative sense. And they go, you don't talk about my mama like that, and I'm going to beat you up for talking about my mama like that. And then things never change, because we never become individuals. So we can't truly serve other people. It's ironic, because when you start serving, but only in the context of the community, then you can't really serve people you can serve them in a very superficial way, but not in the deeper way. Not in the way that transforms people's lives, the way in the way that revolutionizes the whole environment and the lives of everybody around you. You can't do that if you're tied to the collective. It's so ironic. If you really want to serve others, you have to detach yourself from this collective mentality, and see everyone as individuals. And yes, you can see patterns. You can see groups of people. Yeah, to see the patterns and the influences, because that's a reality. You can't deny that. But the thing is that those groups and those patterns, those groups are not defining of the person's identity. And you have there's no loyalty, no sense of loyalty. You're not attached to any of these groups. You're an individual. And your value comes from within you. It's been put within you, and it's inside of you. It is not associated to anybody or anything else. You're your own value, independent of everyone else. If everyone else hates the hell out of you, but you are in the right, then your value is undeniable and real. No one can take it away from you. You see what I'm saying? So when you are put with this burden that you owe the community and you have to give back. And I don't mean, and this doesn't mean that you have to be an ungrateful bastard either. If other people have given to you in your life, then yeah, be grateful. You can say give back, but you know, give freely as you were given freely. You know, if people are giving you stuff, but they're giving it to you with strings, they're not really giving it to you. You know, it's like when people give things to you with a string, it's exactly the same thing as what a fisherman does with the fish. You know, the fisherman, you know, puts a worm in the hook and throws it in the water, and the fish says, the guy's giving me food. Yes, he is. But you know what happens after the fish takes the food, because there's a string attached to it. The fish has its life taken away from it, and it's gone. And that's exactly what people do to you when they give you things with strings attached. But if they give it to you freely, then yes, then there's a gratitude that will flow from inside of you, and you will give freely back. And if you don't give in that sense, then you are an ungrateful bastard. But there is no strings attached. There was one individual giving to you as an individual in a loving way, freely. And then you return the favor and say thank you. And then you give freely. But it's an obligation that comes from within. It's not a pressure from the community telling you, hey, you owe us. We gave you life. There's no collective entity that has the right to tell you that you owe your life to them, because you have a value. Even if everybody else got wiped off the face of the earth, you would remain on earth, and you still have the same value you had when everybody else was around. It doesn't matter what everybody else thinks or says about you. If you were worthless before, you will be worthless afterwards. But if you have a real worth, if you stood for something and you had a value inside of you, that value will remain with you. It is ridiculous to think that my value depends on the ethnicity I was born into. I mean, is it my fault if I'm born Native American or some race? I mean, I can't choose the race I'm in. And to have then my identity defined by circumstances, where you were born into a certain culture, and then you owe a loyalty to that culture, your value, your identity, your worth is tied to that culture, is ridiculous. It is wrong. And so I know that this seems completely unrelated to Camp Lejeune, but it's the same thing, and I hope you see it. Because the Camp Lejeune lawsuit thing, it shows how... We allow the collective to hide people from accountability, and then on the other hand, the collective, we allow the collective to impose itself on us and to claim that it has given us life and that we permanently owe to it, and we have to give back to them because they gave us our identity, when our identity came from before birth. It's a priori. It's not a posterior Beori, or however you pronounce it. Those are two things we wanted to talk about, and I know time is running out. It's way over what I expected, but I want to talk very briefly about a few stories that may seem unrelated, but they are related, and we may have to continue in another audio snippet. I'm not sure, but the thing is, one story that came out recently was in. I apologize. I'm looking for it right now. It's in the SWTimes.com, I had it here, but okay. The story is something that happened in Arkansas. The headline says, and again, this is the SWTimes.com. I have no idea what this website is about. I just found a link from a conservative website. But the story says, police respond to viral video of Arkansas man's arrest for piercing son's ear. So let me just read part of this quickly. A video said to be of a Tonti Town man, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, being arrested on a felony complaint of piercing his son's left ear has gone viral, prompting police to release a statement about their actions. Jeremy Sherland is seen on the video as five police officers arrest him inside his home. Police confirmed the Thursday arrest. Sherland laughs loudly, tossing his head up, and he's heard saying, "Body art without a license." He's then arrested on a felony complaint of piercing his son's ear at home and pushed out by the officers. In the video of the arrest, a woman says, "Guys, chill. What's really going on here, you know? This is ridiculous." As Sherland is escorted by officers to a police car parked at the curb, a boy's voice says, "I wanted my ears pierced." I guess this is the son's voice. Then it says here, a woman who states she lives at the house says, quote, "Piercing is done here without a license. It takes three cops, four cops coming into my house with no permission. No permission and busted in my front door. This is the boy right here who got a pierced ear by his dad. These cops busted in my front door. Busted in the front door." Unquote. She could not immediately be reached for comment about the video, blah, blah, blah. Then it says, so it turns out that the cops just, and I'm looking at the video, a part of the video right now, because it runs without my consent, I guess. But the thing is on the page. So the video shows the police officers just, you know, busting through the door and arresting the guy, and there are three white cops, and everybody's white in this story. And it says here, according to a statement Saturday from Tonti Town Police, Sherland faces complaints of violating an Arkansas law that restricts body piercing for children under age 16. The law allows for piercing of the earlobe. Tonti Town Police did not specify what part of the boy's ear had been pierced. It's also unlawful to perform a piercing outside of an unlicensed facility. So, Sherland, 45, was released Saturday from the Washington County, Arkansas jail on $1,500 bond. Online jail records showed he also faces complaints of endangering the welfare of a minor, resisting arrest, and obstruction of government operation. Now, the thing is that, I'm not sure if it's in this story or if I read it somewhere else, but apparently the police showed up because someone at the school overheard, allegedly, the boy saying that his father had pierced his ear. It says, while sitting in class talking with other students and a teacher present, the juvenile male stated his dad was drunk and put him in a chokehold and shoved the piercing in his ear, unquote. So somebody claimed this, and that's why the police showed up and arrested him in such a violent way. Now, the thing is, first of all, you know, it's going by the comments of someone. Is it true? Is it not true? If the first thing you would think they would do is go and kind of inquire, find out more details. But instead, they just go ahead and arrest him as if they had a video of him being drunk and putting the kid on the chokehold. And then the kid himself, apparently in the video, says, "I wanted my ears pierced," as if to say, you know, this was not done against my consent or anything like that. I have no idea where they pierced the kid's ear. I have the feeling it was in the top part of the ear, maybe. But the point why I'm saying this is twofold. First of all, you know, who has time to pass a bill, defining what type of ear piercing is legal or illegal, or that you have to be licensed for this, that? Oh yeah, you can pierce the earlobe, you can't pierce any other part of the ear. I mean, who has time for that? There's so many other things going on. But okay, let's say they didn't have anything to do that day. They passed this law. I don't know how old it is. It may have been in the books for 50, 60 years. May have been passed last week. Who knows? The thing is that it seems like an arbitrary law. And it could be up for debate. Well, maybe, yeah, if everybody's piercing their ears any way they want, then they could get gangrene or whatever. And it has to be a licensed thing and so forth. And somebody could be doing this without being regulated. But it's his dad and his son. It's not like he's running a business of piercing people's ears. He just pierced his own son's ear. And, you know, you could debate the merits of the law, but the point is this law was not passed by the federal government. This law was passed by a state government. And this goes to what we've said about federalism now, and the things we've also shared before in these audio snippets. If there's a law in one state that's very particular, and it's the question is, why is it only applicable in that one state? There has to be a justification. So when laws are passed at the state level that are not at the national level, and there's a responsibility from not starting with the representative at the federal level, that would be the way it would be in the new American Constitution. The congressman at the state level would see what laws are being passed in his state by the state government, and then he or she could file a complaint or some sort of legal motion to challenge or to question the validity of that law just in that state, or to propose that law be made national. But there'd be some sort of someone monitoring state laws. You know, little things like, you know, this park closes after 5 p.m. as opposed to 9 p.m. You know, that's very local, very, very... very particular. So those things, obviously, you know, you can't say, all because this park in this town closes at 5, all parks across the country have to close at 5 p.m. That would be ridiculous. That's not what we're talking about. But for example, if a state legalizes prostitution, as is the case in Nevada, in portions of Nevada, as they say in Nevada, then the question is, well, why can't you make prostitution legal in the whole country? What is so particular about the prostitutes of Nevada that only they can, work, quote unquote, legally, whilst the rest of the prostitutes in America cannot? What is so different about about the women in Nevada that they can be prostitutes as opposed to women in other states? If prostitution is illegal in all the other states, because of medical reasons or whatever reasons there are, why do those medical reasons stop applying once you enter Nevada airspace? So if there's an inconsistency when one local law begins to diverge in a certain fundamental way from the rest of the country, then there is a question. Well, then the country should be able to then say, hey, challenge that law and say, hey, you can't do that because you can maybe do it temporarily, but for a season, but you have to give an explanation to the rest of the country of why you're doing that. And if you don't, then your law cannot be upheld and it has to be struck down. So yeah, I mean, if this law has merit, there's something maybe problematic with piercing someone with that, if you don't know what the hell you're doing, piercing certain parts of the ear, then we should propose making it national. But otherwise, don't just have this patchwork quilt of laws where these crazy laws apply in one state and don't apply in another. So I've heard all these stories about all these quirky laws in certain towns and certain portions of the country where certain odd things are illegal for some odd reason. It's just these quirky laws. And how can laws be in the books? You can't have this hodgepodge system. And so that's one thing. But the other thing is, isn't this an example of tyranny? Because the conservative website, the link to this, kind of portrayed it as tyranny. And a lot of people who commented on the conservative website about this talk about, how police are becoming these drones that enforce these horrible laws and all that, and complaining. And I go, okay, all these people are complaining, but did they ever notice, did they pay attention and realize this was not the federal government committing tyranny? Because they always use the word tyranny, but it's always with the federal government. For some reason, when it comes to state government, it's the word tyranny doesn't appear. They maybe use it for liberal governors and stuff like that. But it's always like this thinking, oh yeah, the liberals are tyrannical. But no. It's state government is being tyrannical. The California state government is a tyranny. Then we have tyranny here in Arkansas. And Arkansas is not a hotbed of liberalism. It's the total opposite. It's almost as red as you can get. I mean, they have a very conservative governor right now, the daughter of Mike Huckabee. I forget her name. If I'm not mistaken, she's the current governor of Arkansas. Very conservative lady. And yet you have a manifestation of a violation of a right of an individual. If we are to kind of believe, I'm not too sure. Maybe I don't know all the details, but I would tend to lean that the police overreacted, and that they're applying a law that is tyrannical. You know, where you have to get a license to pierce your son's ear outside of the earlobe. I mean, I'm not a fan of piercing myself, to be frank, but we're not talking about a more sensitive body part. We're talking about the ear. And people and cultures have been piercing their ears for centuries. I mean, look in Africa and other places in the Middle East, the piercing of the ear, not just in the earlobes, is like a thing that's been going on for centuries. I don't personally, I'm not a fan of it, but it's not like it's some sort of capital crime. The thing is that this is an example of a conservative state exercising tyranny from the state level, enforcing a stupid, what seems to be like a very stupid state law that no other state would apply because it's just so stupid, or at least only other stupid states would apply it. And I'm not saying Arkansas is a stupid state, but in this case it is. You know, it's acting stupidly. And that goes to the concept of federalism. Federalism is collectivism, but at the state level. So it's saying, I'm not accountable to the evil federal government. The bigger collective, I couldn't care for. But I am to submit to the state government. The state government is sovereign. And this entity can rule my life and tyrannize me and do whatever it wants with me. And I'm not going to complain, because if I complain, I'm going to make the founding fathers look bad, because they put in place this system. See, so they are tied to the state. They're tied to the state government because they're tied to this entity of Americanism from the founding fathers' perspective. And that's the entity that they owe their loyalty to. They're, oh yeah, I'm an American. And if it weren't for the founding fathers, there'd be no America. So I'd be nothing. Like, I owe my life to this system. So they can't question the system. And one of the things that they have to surrender is the questioning of the state sovereignty. So the state becomes this collective entity that they have to be loyal to, because if they're disloyal to it, they'll be disloyal to the founding fathers. So they can't question state sovereignty. And federalism is a manifestation of that, where the right of the individual is trumped by the rights or the powers of the collective government. That's why we talked ad nauseum about the 11th Amendment in the past, how the 11th Amendment is an example of how the state of Georgia was allowed to steal, I forget which state it was, but I think it was Georgia, was lent money by someone in South Carolina, the family from the South Carolina sued the state of Georgia to get their money back, and the state of Georgia said, no, we're a sovereign state. And the 11th Amendment was passed because of that lawsuit to say no individual from another state can sue a state because the state is sovereign. In other words, the individual right to property was trounced by the power of the collective state. It's the same concept. Federalism is communism in a different way. It's the same spirit, the same mindset of surrendering yourself to a collective and saying my individual rights are not as important as the rights of the state. And my state defines my identity. That's why the Southerners who fought in the Civil War, because their identity was tied to the South and to the Southern values. And they said, our values are being attacked and therefore we're going to fight back. It was not because they were fighting for the truth. No, it's their collective identity was being attacked. And that's why conservatism is a failed philosophy, because it's the same thing. Our American values are being attacked. I could give a rodent's derriere. I don't give a rat's backside about American values being attacked. No, it's the truth being attacked. That's what I care about, is the truth being attacked. If the truth is being attacked, I'm going to fight back. I couldn't care less if American values are being attacked. I don't derive my identity, my sense of worth from American values. I derive my sense of identity from the truth. And if the American values are tied to the truth, I will fight for them. But not because they're American values, it's because they're the truth. You see what I'm saying? There's a certain always surrendering of your identity whenever you start talking that way. And that's the problem with conservatism. And there were other stories that we wanted to share. I'm not sure if we will talk about them next time. Maybe we will. And someday we will talk about the presidential election of 1876. Thank you very much for listening.